Today is Thursday, February 11th, and you are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Democrats show new footage of the deadly January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol.
The violence was not just foreseeable to President Trump. The violence was what he deliberately encouraged.
Also ahead, Europe defends its vaccination rollouts.
Brussels has imposed export controls to ensure that drug companies manufacturing vaccines in Europe fulfill contracts with the EU before sending them overseas.
These stories and more are next. Our top story today is the impeachment trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump. House impeachment managers Wednesday showed never-before-seen footage from the January 6th riot of Trump supporters at the U.S. Capitol. The video capped the first day of Democrats' opening arguments that former President Donald Trump was directly responsible for the attempt to overturn the counting of Electoral College votes for Joe Biden. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
The vice president and U.S. senators just steps away from likely attack. Police beaten by rioters. Scenes that paint a fuller picture of the violent threat inside the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th riot, revealed in previously unreleased security footage shown by House impeachment managers on the opening day of their argument that former President Donald Trump was directly responsible for that riot. House impeachment manager, Representative Jamie Raskin.
We will prove that the impeached president was no innocent bystander, whose conduct was totally appropriate and should be a standard for future presidents, but that he incited this attack and he saw it coming.
Impeachment managers arguing Trump stopped the steel rally ahead of the riot was not an isolated event, but the culmination of months of election fraud allegations and incitement of supporters to attack the electoral process. Democratic Representative Eric Swalwell.
This was never about one speech. He built this mob over many months with repeated messaging until they believed that they had been robbed of their vote and they would do anything to stop the certification.
Trump's electoral challenge failed in U.S. courts in the weeks before the riot, noted the House impeachment managers. Democratic Representative Madeline Dean.
Not a single court, not a single judge agreed that the election results were invalid or should be invalidated.
They laid out evidence they said shows the former president turned to his supporters to stop the Democratic process certifying Joe Biden the winner. Democratic Representative Stacey Plaskett.
Make no mistake, the violence was not just foreseeable to President Trump. The violence was what he deliberately encouraged.
Trump's lawyers present their defense on Friday. They argue Trump was exercising his right to free speech and cannot be held responsible for the chaos. Although critics say Trump's lawyers have struggled to make their case, it is unlikely Trump will be convicted. 17 Republican senators would have to join Democrats in finding him guilty. Brookings Institution fellow John Hudak.
They're beholden to the former president himself. They see that their own political fortunes depend on Trump voters coming out and voting for them in their own Senate races, particularly in Republican states. And so no matter what evidence House members, House managers are going to present at the trial, a significant number of Republicans will ignore them and still vote to acquit the president.
At stake is Trump's ability to run for federal office again. House managers have 8 more hours to present their case on Thursday. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
For more on Wednesday's hearing and what's next for Thursday, I reached out to our congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, the footage that was shown yesterday, what stands out the most to you?
I think that there was an incredible amount of footage that was new, that was security camera footage that has not been seen before by anyone here in the United States, and so gave a much broader sense of the scope of the attack on the Capitol on January 6th. You know, so many lawmakers and journalists were inside the Capitol on that day, and for them, it was very striking to understand just how close the rioters got to both the House and the Senate chambers, and seeing that they were really, really a matter of seconds away from Vice President Mike Pence, from Senator Romney, from all of these lawmakers who were certifying the Electoral College vote. And they were saying, these rioters were chanting that they wanted to hang Mike Pence. They wanted to enact violence against these lawmakers. And it's quite startling to see how very close they came to fulfilling that goal.
And, you know, it's not easy footage to watch. When you see that violence, when you hear that violent rhetoric, when you see how close it came to being even more violent than it was, what's your sense of how the lawmakers reacted, you know, emotionally to seeing that footage yesterday?
Right. That was a very intense moment in the Senate chamber when that footage was being played. And, you know, all of us in the press gallery actually received a warning email saying that the graphic footage was about to play. We received multiple warnings from the House impeachment managers, but really nothing could prepare anybody in that chamber for the experience of watching now Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer literally running away from the mob with his security detail. Senator Romney almost walking straight into the mob and only being saved by the Capitol Police officer, Eugene Goodman. You know, all of these moments that really have no forerunner in American history. This is something that we watched for the very first time yesterday. And I think a lot of lawmakers were standing up, were trying to look to see even more closer detail what was going on in that video, trying to process it, and many of them were observed visibly emotional, tears in their eyes. Republicans were shook up as well. This is something that we're not going to process this attack all at once. This is something that's going to be with the United States for a very long time.
There's time left in the trial. We haven't heard the defense yet. But do you think the footage that was shown yesterday may have changed anyone's views?
That's really the key question of this trial. Some Republican senators, notably Lindsey Graham, who is, of course, a Trump ally on Capitol Hill, was saying that this doesn't matter, that this is, you know, it makes Trump look like he was a member of the Proud Boys, one of the far right organizations that stormed the Capitol. He said that that was, quote, ridiculous. But some other Republican senators appeared to be visibly moved, said to reporters that they were still refraining from making any judgments and looking at the evidence. I think that House impeachment managers need to come back today and really make the argument that Trump and only Trump was responsible for inciting that violence and did so, you know, willingly, that he embraced that violence and that he really did not step in to act when his vice president was in mortal danger, when one of the other branches of government was under siege. They need to come back today and hammer in that argument if they want to win the 17 Republican senators who need to go and vote to convict for Trump to even get to that point where he could be barred from running for federal office. That is a long shot, but I think there's still a possibility.
Got it. Thanks so much, Catherine. Really appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
That was VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. The European Union Commission's president defended the bloc's coronavirus vaccination strategy Wednesday amid growing criticism of delays in procurement and delivery. Henry Ridgewell reports from London that the bloc is facing crises on multiple fronts.
105-year-old Elisabeth Stuyvesant on her way to be vaccinated in her home city of Cologne, Germany, Monday.
It's a very, very good thing. And I wish, even though I'm old, that many, many people will do it.
Many Europeans want the vaccine, but the bloc is battling a supply shortage. The slow start is causing political pain for the EU. By the first week of February, the EU had given first vaccine doses to just under 4% of its population, compared to 11% in the US and 17% in Britain. Matt Bevington is an analyst from the UK in a Changing Europe programme at King's College London.
You can say the Commission handled the contract negotiations with these companies badly compared to the UK and compared to the US. But when it comes to approval, that was a conscious decision. They knew it was going to be slower, and they knew that that would then have a knock-on impact on rollout. There have also been additional problems well-publicised to do with the delivery of vaccines by different companies.
Brussels has imposed export controls to ensure that drug companies manufacturing vaccines in Europe fulfil contracts with the EU before sending them overseas. Speaking to EU lawmakers Wednesday, EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen admitted mistakes had been made.
Wir waren spät dran bei der Zulassung.
We were late to authorize. We were too optimistic when it came to massive production, and perhaps we were too confident that what we ordered would actually be delivered on time.
But von der Leyen defended the EU strategy.
It was the right thing to do that we as Europeans collectively ordered the vaccine. I cannot even imagine if big players, big member states had rushed in and everybody else had been left empty-handed. What would that have meant for our European market and the unity of Europe?
For smaller EU member states, the joint procurement has worked, says Bevington.
And if you had had a kind of dog-eat-dog approach to vaccines, you would have had some member states with lots of vaccines and other member states with none. It would have generated lots of conflict within the European Union.
Conflict may have been averted, but criticism of the EU Commission is getting louder. The EU's threat to block vaccine exports to Northern Ireland, quickly rescinded, prompted criticism from London and Dublin. Meanwhile, in another crisis, the bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, has come under fire over his Moscow trip this past weekend, taken against the advice of many EU officials. Russia expelled three European diplomats just as Borrell and his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, began a press conference, an action widely seen as an attempt to humiliate the EU for its support for jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Borrell received stinging criticism as he faced European lawmakers this week, among them Polish MEP Anna Fotyga.
You decided to go there and was led to a trap carefully prepared by Sergei Lavrov.
Analysts say these controversies within the EU will likely die down if Europe's vaccination programme continues to gather speed. But any further delays could cause lasting damage to the bloc in the eyes of its people. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA. India and China began to pull back troops and battle tanks today from a bitterly contested lake area high in the western Himalayas after a months-long standoff on the disputed border. The standoff began last April when India said Chinese troops had intruded deep into its side of the de facto border. China said its troops were operating in its own area and accused Indian border guards of provocative actions. In June, the two sides clashed, leaving 20 Indian soldiers dead and an unspecified number of Chinese casualties. Kenya is going ahead with plans to inoculate its citizens with the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine, a senior ministry health official told Reuters today. The announcement comes after South African authorities this week paused the rollout of the AstraZeneca vaccine because it offered minimal protection against mild and moderate cases of the virus variant, which is now dominant in South Africa. On Thursday, the African Union's disease control body said it was not walking away from AstraZeneca's vaccine. Africa Centers for Disease Control Director John Kengasong said that more study was needed to understand how that vaccine works against the variant, which was first identified in South Africa. African countries are due to receive 100 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine this year under an AU vaccine plan. Kengasong also said the Africa CDC is discussing with Johnson & Johnson to supply more of its vaccine. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. The U.S. slapped additional sanctions on Myanmar following the February 1st military coup. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara reports.
Protests continue in Myanmar following the February 1st military coup. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden announced he is imposing new sanctions on the country's military leaders, their business interests, and family members. Those are on top of sanctions already applied starting in 2017 for atrocities against Myanmar's Rohingya minority.
We will identify at first round of targets this week, and we're also going to impose strong exports controls. We're freezing U.S. assets that benefit the Burmese government while maintaining our support for healthcare, civil society groups, and other areas that benefit the people of Burma directly.
With few economic ties and sanctions already in place, U.S. leverage on Myanmar is limited. But sanctions targeting the junta, matched by U.S. allies, can be effective, according to analysts. Gregory Poling is a senior fellow for Southeast Asia at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Maybe in cooperation with other parties, the Japanese, for instance, who are major players in the economy, the U.S. can help shift the cost-benefit analysis a little bit and incentivize compromise and a return to democracy. But if we think that we're going to slap sanctions and Minong Hwang is going to say, I'm sorry, we are mistaken.
Washington is working with regional allies, including Japan, India, and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, who have signaled their support for U.S. outreach to Myanmar. Taiwei Lim is a research fellow at the National University of Singapore's East Asian Institute.
Continued engagement, prevention of isolation of Myanmar, and to have U.S. Play a constructive role in trying to reach this broad consensus.
The Myanmar coup followed accusations of democratic backsliding in the region, including in Brunei, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and the Philippines. Addressing them in the context of strategic competition with China is seen as a challenge for the administration, said Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Woodrow Wilson Center.
How do we compromise and play the long game and keep channels open, even with regimes that we object to? How can we do that and back off of an absolute declaration of principles in order to compete with China while still claiming that the grounds of our competition with China is in some way ideological?
The U.S. has been criticized as hypocritical for sanctioning countries after a violent siege of the U.S. Capitol by supporters of former President Donald Trump, who falsely claimed the U.S. presidential election was stolen. The same pretext the Myanmar military used for the coup. Gregory Poling of CSIS.
I don't think it was ever all that effective when U.S. officials went in to Southeast Asian states preaching, but now they'll just be laughed at.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says there is bipartisan support for Myanmar sanctions, but acknowledged America has work to do at home as well.
Pulling our country together, revitalizing our own democratic foundation, building more unity, as President Biden has talked about, that will be an important part of us operating effectively in the world.
Analysts say some allies may question U.S. resolve in the region, given Washington's foreign policy shifts with each new administration. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
New Zealand has also imposed a travel ban and cut ties with military leaders in Myanmar. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand has said it doesn't recognize the legitimacy of the military-led government in Myanmar. Authorities in Wellington have called for the release of all detained political leaders and for restoration of civilian rule. The government is implementing a travel ban on Myanmar's military leaders. Wellington has said it will ensure its overseas aid program wouldn't include projects that would benefit Myanmar's military leaders. New Zealand Foreign Affairs Minister Nanaia Mahuta told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that strict measures were needed.
It sends a fairly clear message that the situation in Myanmar in terms of the military coup and government takeover isn't to be tolerated. Look, the people of Myanmar over the last 10 years have had two multi-party elections and a democratically designated government, and the transition to democracy hasn't been an easy pathway.
Hundreds of pro-democracy demonstrators gathered Tuesday outside the New Zealand Parliament, protesting the actions of Myanmar's military. New Zealand has joined other countries calling for a special session at the United Nations Human Rights Council on Myanmar to consider the impact of the military takeover on human rights. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In Ethiopia, rare witness accounts are illuminating the toll of the shadowy conflict in the Tigray region as fighting enters a fourth month. An American nurse who recently escaped tells the Associated Press that perhaps 1,000 people were killed around her family's town alone, and an opposition official says his party and others have compiled thousands of names of dead civilians. Hailu Kebede, foreign affairs head for the Salse Wayane Tigray Opposition Party, warns that once the region becomes accessible, quote, the world will apologize to the people of Tigray, but it will be too late, end quote. Red Cross officials now warn that thousands of people could starve to death in the coming weeks. Both a spokeswoman for Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and the official overseeing Tigray's state of emergency didn't respond to the AP's questions. The Prime Minister, who once said no civilian had been killed in the conflict, now says the suffering and deaths in Tigray, quote, have caused much distress for me personally, end quote. The president of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is expressing concern about the humanitarian situation in Mekelle, the capital of the Tigray region. Francesco Roca just visited Mekelle, and he told VOA's James Butte that humanitarian assistance must be increased to meet the needs of the people.
I visited only Mekelle and not the rural areas and the other cities. Mekelle, more or less, is like a normal city yesterday and the day before yesterday, but the hospitals, they have run out of medicines and drugs. I visited two hospitals and they have no patients in because they have no drugs and medicine to treat them or to make surgery. And even I visited one of them was a maternal one. They only have natural delivery because they don't have any kind of surgical support. So the situation is something very, very delicate looking at the health system, even because it is really broken. Only four hospitals in the region out of 40 are working, but working in the way that I just told you. They are completely stopped. And some of them have been damaged, or other health facilities have been damaged or looted. And this is something, a big reason of concern.
Previously, they have been concerned about accessibility to the region. How did you find accessibility?
Access in Mekelle, also in Adigato-Jire and Adwa is improving about the main roads, but still the rural areas are really insecure. And still, is not. We are waiting for the green light. This is we have been promised, but not only us, other international organizations had received the same commitment from the government that will allow to the flights. But at the moment, we are still waiting the first flight to arrive. So this is it's another reason of concern because access to the rural areas, but also receiving aid needed to support the millions in need is a question of really of time, and that we do need to scale up the activities because I've talked only about health, but it's also about food. We have reports of several cases of malnutrition, especially amongst children, and this again, once again, is unacceptable. And I visited the Grand IDP Center in Mekelle, one of the several, because there are more than 250,000 IDPs living in Mekelle, only in Mekelle, but there are other IDPs camps in Adigrat and mostly in Shire, and the stories are really very, very sad.
They have been concerned about the impact of this conflict on not just Mekelle, but the entire region. I mean, how would you describe the impact on the region?
At the moment, the impact is a severe one because, Sudan is hosting thousands and thousands of refugees. So the dynamic in the region remain very volatile and very complex because these about the rumors of other actors coming from other states within Tigray operating. These are the kind of situation that can bring even to most difficult situations in the next future. Let me put it in this way. I am here to assess the needs, and I don't want to be involved in the political dynamic. But if they don't assess the needs of the IDPs, the needs of the Tigray people, and there will be an international political dialogue about what is happening on the ground, the risk of an escalation is very high.
That was IFRC President Francesco Rocca speaking to VOA's James Butte. And that's it for our show today. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.